There is a long-standing debate among preachers on the question of whether or not you ought to preach on this day. That is a debate that does not fall along the usual lines of division in our church. There's not Anglo-Catholics on one side and evangelicals on the other, not progressives on one side and conservatives on the other. You can find people on all sides of the question in just about every corner of the church. One view holds that the preacher, of course, must stand at this moment and help the people understand and make meaning of the story we have just said together. And the other view holds equally strongly that the passion narrative itself is the last word and needs nothing more to be said. I suppose the fact that I am speaking to you now might suggest to you which side of that debate your bishop is on. But there is no sermon to be preached today interpreting or exploring the text that you have been reading. On this day of all days, that is your work to do and not mine. Instead, I want to just offer a few very short words about what it is we have all just done and why we have done it. If you grew up in the church, at least any church like the one I grew up in, Palm Sunday was always the most dramatic day of the church year. At All Saints Church in East Lansing, Michigan, we all began outside in the parking lot and did the thing we did out in the tent. We all got our palms and we went around in circles in the parking lot and then came up the hill into the back door of the church in this giant chaotic parade. We kids would bring our little Lenten mite boxes to church. Do you remember those things that you put a dime or a quarter in every time you thought of chocolate during Lent? And we would all be called forward and there would be a wooden frame cross in the front that we would put our little boxes in and it would all fill up in this glorious contribution. If you were a kid, you might be given a speaking role. Maybe you'd be a soldier or a bystander. If you were Marty Hedges, who always read really well, you'd always be the maid. But when it was over, the whole tone of the day had changed. The music was sadder, the prayers were sparse, and the mood of the adults around you had changed. This all may seem silly and showy to you that we do all this. It is maybe the one moment in the whole church year that you feel most self-conscious about being here. Believe me when I tell you that when you are the priest of a small church, today is the single most stressful service of the whole year. Because just as the reading begins, you start to wonder, did I assign all the parts? Will they remember the lines they're supposed to say? Will it be okay? And of course, it will be okay. We don't have to be Oberammergau here. The deep wisdom of the church in asking us to do this crazy thing every year can be a little hard to see in all the chaos and the preparations and that we're starting late and all of that, but it is deep wisdom indeed. Because today is designed to get you to confront something our whole culture is designed to shield you from, the unremitting reality of our physical death. It is all too easy for us to be lulled into forgetting that basic fact. It is hidden from our view most of the time. Our culture celebrates youth and turns our eyes away from suffering. There is too much money at stake in selling you the fiction that you are somehow an exception to this rule. But we shall all die. We suffer the death of loved ones. We suffer the death of relationships that we have treasured. We look upon the body of someone whom life has left, and we are confronted with the unsettling reality that someday the same will be true of us. It can't be an accident that lately my reading list has been filled with this reminder. An essay in the New York Times that I just read 3 days ago by a doctor writing about how to know when a patient is ready to hear the news that they are dying. A recycled article from The Atlantic magazine, a magazine I've written for in the past, by a doctor talking about the experience of the existential slap. It's a phrase that doctors use for that moment when a dying person realizes that death is near. Or even the beautiful little book that was given to me by Archbishop Stephen Cottrell when he came last week to speak at our revival. A book called God Forsaken, a whole book of 7 chapters on just these words, my God, why have you forsaken me? Oh, friends, I know these are not easy things to talk about. They are deeply personal. They live somewhere deep in the core of our souls. Here in this room, right now, there are as many different ways of thinking about this as there are people. Maybe like me, you have been at the bedside of people who are dying. Maybe, like me, you have had the privilege of watching while life left someone and death came. And whenever that happens, whatever else you experience, you are profoundly aware that you are in the presence of what is holy. You are a witness to something sacred. This day is meant to bring all of us, you and me, all together to stare the reality of our death in the face, to see it fully and frankly as we can bear. That is the wisdom of the church, because it is only by doing this that we're going to have any chance of getting the point of next week, when we stand with Mary in utter confusion at the door of an empty tomb. I'm not a scientist. I can't tell you the physical properties by which, in spite of which, the God of all creation and of all life, the God who is Jesus, accomplishes the defeat of death through the resurrection. But what I can tell you is it happens. And here is the outrageous claim of the faith we profess here together. It will happen for each one of us too. Of course, if it were possible to explain, if Allison or Dr. Williams or me or Archbishop Cottrell or Michael Curry could tell you what happened on that morning, we wouldn't be a church anymore. We'd be a laboratory. We'd be seeing if we could replicate a finding. But what we get instead is this story. The story we all take a role again in this year in order to remind us that it is our story. What we get is the story of a man not just dead, but killed, executed, and left hanging and torn on a cross. What we get is a confrontation with the inescapable truth of our physical death, a story so powerful that it demands to have the last word. What we get today is this reality: we die. And what we get is this faith: death is not the last word. Not about Jesus. And because of Jesus, not about us either. Nothing that God's love touches is ever lost to death, because God's touch is life itself. That is what is done for us by the cross. But unless we face the death, then the faith we have is incomplete, not all that it might be. We believe in a God greater even than death, who will never abandon us, not even in our grave. But for now, as Archbishop Cottrell has written in that little book he gave us, the important thing is the death itself. And those of us who aren't dying yet must watch and wait.